look, that's how you do it, if mm-hmm. you gotta do it.
Yeah.
But now, they cross the bridge, and it's time for our intermission. Applauders, we're only halfway through.
Yeah, and Tim points them in the direction of a cave, but that will show them the location of the castle, but it's guarded by a hideous monster with, like, there's this long description that Tim the Enchanter gives on this monster, and it ends with big pointy teeth, and he, like, puts three fingers up to his mouth. And he's, like, gnawing, pantomiming it. Yes.
Arthur turns around and is like, we gotta go. And then, like, John Cleese is behind him being like, ang, 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 it's so cute. It's just like, the weird little visuals that they do, like, improv is, like, so good. You gotta be a man of valor to go fight this beast, apparently. Mm-hmm. And so the party moves on. Tim is like, we're close or something like that. Mm-hmm. And Arthur says we need to dismount. So all of these knights, like, they all, in unison, kind of, like, throw their right leg back, and they, like, do this little bouncy dismount.
Because they're not on actual horses. They're pantomiming the horses.
Yes, and this is where we lose all of, like, the squires or whatever who are using the coconut noise, and we come down to the core of the cast for the remainder of the film, really.
Right, right. And so they get to the cavern. They see that the cave is guarded by a fierce creature, also known as a rabbit.
Yes, I wrote down bunnies, and then they go, rabbit! And then I had to cross it out and write rabbit down. And then, Eric Idle is like, I think it's Eric Idle. He's just like, you made me soil myself!
Yeah.
It's a rabbit, you...
And so they go...
I'm not sure if Jonathan needs to bleep that. Is enough of a swear word?
I don't know.
I don't know. We'll let you decide, Johnny Bear.
Anyway, so they send a guy to destroy the rabbit, and they find that this rabbit is actually pretty bad. Takes off a guy's entire head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just straight off.
And then Eric Idle says once again,
I've soiled myself again. Something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he goes, I did it again. And he kind of like shimmies around and you're like, oh, I know what he did. And they call back to that at least one more time.
Yeah.
So it's great. Oh, man. Yeah.
And so they go fighting the rabbit, but that
proves. They're going to charge them all.
Yeah, but it doesn't work because this rabbit is bad.
Yeah, they, like, kill five or three more people or whatever.
Yeah. And that's when they realize...
Eric Idle says, oh, I did it again.
And then that's when they realize they need to pull out the holy hand grenade of Antioch.
Oh.
And this is probably, like, if you were to sum up this movie in one scene, this would be the scene that I would pull out.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, you got a king who, leading up to this moment... has pretty, like, at the start of the scene when they first are dealing with the rabbit, he says, they were like, who did we lose? And they list off, like, three different people. And he's like, okay, just four. And he's like, three, sir. And so there's, like, kind of this running gag in this entire scene where the king does not understand numbers.
You can't keep track of them at all.
Yeah. Cause when they bring out the holy hand grenade, there's this whole, like, book that they pull out.
Yeah.
And he says,
And they look very ceremonial, like old school, like super old school Catholic ceremony. They got vestments and they've got the book being carried on a pillow by an attendant. And they have the
Brother Maynard.
Is that his name? Brother
Maynard. I think so, yeah.
All right. And then they're consulting the Book of Armaments, verse 9-21. I wrote look this up, but I did not. And they start the reading and we've all been there, but they start the reading and they talk about, no, shall you, and you shall feast upon the flesh of the da, da, da,
lambs and the sloths and the orangutans and the anchovies.
And then the head guy goes, skip a bit, brother.
And so they skip a bit and then they get to the instructions on what they're supposed to do. And it's this whole like screed of three shall be the number of the counting and the number of the counting shall be three.
You shall not count to two lest it be followed by three.
Yeah, and then it talks about, like, you don't count to four, and five is right out. I feel like we should have been a little bit more, like writing this down.
I mean, like, it, but here's the thing. The entire movie would be us quoting it the entire time.
That's true. I like it probably is better that we're doing it secondhand.
Yeah, our sad, sad memories of like being able to quote it.
Because we're too sick to actually remember things accurately at this point.
Hey, don't admit to our applauders that we've both come to this podcast slightly sick. But we will list off the five steps of the holy pentagram. Okay, so the first thing you do?
Yeah, pull the pin.
The holy pin.
Yeah.
The second thing you do is thou shalt count to three, no more, no less.
Mm-hmm.
Step number three, three shalt be three. And then number four is, shall thou not count? Four thou shalt not count. And five is right out.
Yeah.
And I mean, they make it all flowery and stuff, but that's the basic breakdown. I wrote it down, the structure, but I didn't want to quote it all the way because it just seems like, if you were like, why didn't they quote the entire thing? Go watch it. It's on Netflix.
Yeah. You got a Netflix subscription? Pull it up.
We wanted it to be accessible. And if not, if you don't have it, if you don't have Netflix, patron your fine local library. There are ways to get them to have movies that you want to see. And this is certainly classic enough that they would probably put it in rotation.
Right. I did want to say one last thing about the scene. At the very end, when they're quoting the Book of Armaments, they say, "Lobby it towards thy foe, who, being not in my sight, shall snuff it."
Snuff is one of my favorite ways of describing somebody being killed.
And so the king, who can't math good, says...
Oh, and if you want to skip to this part of the film, it's minute 114.
And so the king, who's not good at math, throws the grenade. One, two, five! Three-sa! Three! And then he throws it. And it works!
Blows up the bunny.
Yeah.
Which is actually a rabbit. But guess what? There's another NCIS scene we cut to.
They like go into the cave.
Oh yeah, they go into the cave. The NCIS guys show up at the mouth of the cave.
My notes say that they go into the cave, and that's when they have the whole.
That's a running from the beast scene, right?
It's like they see that the guy who is Joseph of Arimathea is like chiseling out this whole thing.
Yes,
and he chisels out
because the whole point is that they go into this cave and find the last words of Dude of Arimathea.
Yeah,
and this will lead them to the Holy Grail. So they've made it to the back of the cave, and then Eric Idle, doesn't he, like read the writing on the wall?
Ah,
he must have died while writing that.
Why would he die while he was writing it? Maybe it was dictated.
He was writing out "arg" and then like,
yeah. And then a monster approaches, and then Eric Idle says, "It's the black beast of and he gets eaten.
Yes.
Yeah. And then the beast chase them. It's one of this one of the animated bits of like a beast with lots of eyes.
Yes. He looks like a bouquet of eyeballs.
Yeah.
On top of like a lizard monster body. A bit like a Komodo dragon.
Yeah. And did you know that if an animator dies in the middle of animating the monster, it just gets taken out of the movie altogether? I did not know that.
The monster dissolves to white and then out of the film at all.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, it might have been Terry Gilliam dying dramatically like a bug.
Right.
They cut to a modern, to the time, animation room, and he's like drawing, and then he goes, and then he like falls back.
Yeah.
His arms akimbo like a dead bug would bring them in.
Yeah.
Like, it's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then the police appear at the cave looking at all the dead bodies. And then we come to the Bridge of Death.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is where the NCIS bunny massacre scene is. They like... Yeah, sorry. So, like, after the monster has faded.
Yeah.
But now we're at the Bridge of Death.
Yeah, and if you can answer me these questions, three, the other side of the bridge you see. And
my notes are like, the king's like, three, five, three, five, three, yeah. Three.
Yeah, it's kind of ongoing. And Lancelot goes up and he answers the three questions.
Do you have the answers that they give? Because I have the questions that they're asked.
Yeah, like the first one is,
what is your name?
Sir Lancelot.
What is your quest?
I seek the Grail.
What is your favorite color?
Oh, blue.
All right, go on.
And then brave Sir Robin.
What? Okay, so we're now at Sir Robin.
Yeah.
What is your name?
Sir Robin.
What is your quest?
I seek the Grail.
What is the capital of Wisteria?
Well, I don't know that.
Ah!
An interesting, interesting point. The capital of Assyria.
Lydia, Lydia, Lydia. I'm just so proud of you for looking this up because I didn't even think to.
Assur.
Assur.
Yeah.
All right, Sir Galahad, it's your turn.
Oh.
What is your name?
Sir Galahad.
What is your quest?
I seek the Grail.
What is your favorite color?
Blue. No, wait.
Okay, so then it's now you're King Arthur.
Yeah.
What is your name?
I'm Arthur, King of the Britons.
What is your quest?
I seek the Grail.
What is the airspeed of an unladen swallow?
What do you mean, European or African?
I don't know.
Oh, it's so good. It's like the moment when the guy who's asking all the questions, he gets like taken down by his own rules.
Look, that's how you do it. If you gotta do it.
Yeah.
But now they cross the bridge and it's time for our intermission. Applauders, we're only halfway through. Hit the mic during that whole bunch. We're at minute 121.
And Lancelot is not on the other side because he's getting arrested.
By the NCIS guys!
It's pretty cool. I mean, they finally got one of them. They were getting close. Anyways. And then...
Oh, the Viking ship.
Oh, yeah.
So they're looking. They're like, Lancelot, Lancelot, Lancelot. They don't see him. And then they're like, oh.
Yeah, it's like they're feeling drawn to a specific area. And Lancelot and Bedivere come across this really cool Viking ship. Which, by the way... It occurred to me, if I had a Viking ship, it wouldn't have the face of a dragon.
No?
It would have the head of a luck dragon. It would be Falkor. I know.
All right. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
If I had a Viking ship, it would have the head of... Hold on. It would have the head of...
Can I guess?
You're not going to guess right.
It's going to be the head of Wallace from Tusk.
No.
Okay.
Lydia, let's be serious. It's going to be...
Sorry.
It's going to be Alan Rickman now.
Do you know in the UK they have this statue of Jeff Goldblum in that pose that he did in Jurassic Park where his shirt's a little bit open?
Where?
I don't know.
Why?
Someone did
How?
A statue.
What? I keep listening to the episode. I mean, I share it. Like, when I have an episode, I'll find somebody to share it with. And I've re-listened to the second episode of... Sorry, the second part of episode 6. So, like, the second part of Earth Girls Are Easy. I've listened to it, like, 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
And every time we get to the Jeff Goldblum part, I feel like I've been, like, so coddled by the editor. I've been so indulged by you about how uncomfortable I got. Jeff Goldblum, I'm sorry.
You know, I did see that that episode of what is that?
Hot Ones?
The Hot Ones, yeah.
Yeah.
I did actually come across it in my YouTube feed. And I mean, while I think that your opinion is valid, I don't find Jeff Goldblum unentertaining in that piece
it
at all.
It was incredibly entertaining, but there comes a point between I would like to hold his hand while we watch a movie.
Yeah.
And me like I would wave at him at a family gathering, but I would end up in the kids' room. Hello, tangent.
So, behold, the castle of Arg.
Because they took that Viking ship. They just climbed on it. Because you do climb on random fancy ships.
Hey, if you're getting a call from God, then you got to answer the call, even if it puts you on a Viking ship and comes to a castle with some French guys.
Yeah, they climb all the way up to this castle. They're just like, oh, we're finally here. The last of us.
Mm-hmm.
Sir Bedivere.
Belvedere.
Sorry. Bedivere. Yes. Bedivere and King Arthur have finally reached their last destination.
Mm-hmm.
God be praised. They bow and they pray. That's why they're like, God be praised. And then they walk the steps up. And then the French fellows.
Yeah, and they're like, we have... Like, he says something along...
We outwitted you a second time!
Yes. Silly English nuggets.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, like...
And then when Arthur and Bedivere storm the front...
They're like, let us in! Or we should beat our way in!
And then they get, like, dunked on with poo, and...
So then, they're no longer the ones not covered in...
Mm-hmm. Well, if God's given you a plan... And someone else gets to it first, then either you weren't God's chosen appointed, or maybe this was God's plan all along for you to be a better person.
Do you think King Arthur's a better person for this?
I don't know. I mean, like, we go into him willing to fight for it. I mean, what? And then before he actually gets to charge on the French castle, the police show up and take him away in handcuffs.
Okay, so what happens? They get dumped on them. They go back to the shore from the other side of the fancy ship they had to deal with. They gather forces.
Yeah.
It's a line that crosses the entire movie screen. It's all a Braveheart. They're like, we're about to up right now. Yeah. They show people building like trebuchets, I assume, or like, and they've got people like, blacksmithing on spears and whatever. And it's all very much like this big lead up to this battle. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens is they start to charge, uh-huh. like you were saying.
Yeah.
And then, like you were also saying, my boos from NCIS show up.
Yeah.
They pull up with a police car and a paddy wagon. And the producer's wife from earlier, she jumps out and she's like, that's them. That's them, officer.
I'm sure of it.
They totally break everything up. They're like, come with me. Come with me. You see Bedivere and you see Arthur both get put in the wagon. They're arresting other people. And then a police officer, a bobby, if you will, approaches the camera and just
smacks it. So it's like, if Arthur had just picked up and walked away and admitted defeat, then would he have been a better person for it? Because, I mean, what would have happened if he had picked up and left? Would he have gotten arrested by the police that were trying to find him?
I think they already had Lancelot
mm-hmm.
from, like, however many scenes ago.
Yeah.
So, like, Lancelot was already arrested. I think he's the one who killed the historian, but maybe they were accomplices, and so they had to arrest everybody else. But what really happened was the budget ran out and they decided to end the film
that because makes sense.
They front-loaded it a whole bunch. And that's minute 129.
Yeah.
And then
that's like, how long did you say that intermission music
goes? I believe it's 3 minutes and 33 seconds.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite time to put soup into the microwave for.
No credits are rolling. It's just a blank screen in the intermission.
The credits were such a spoof at the beginning of the film. And then there's no credits at the end.
Right.
Like, I mean, is it not arts for art's sake?
Yeah.
If you, like, are, like, middle fingering all of the credits. It makes sense because people are more inclined to sit through the beginning of a film. Mm-hmm. Like, only 11% of people sit through the credits at the end, and I'm one of those people because, you know, sometimes they have production babies, and that's totally worth it. Sometimes there's a cut scene, but mostly, you know, somebody's baby made this film, and I would want, I mean, even though, like, Jonathan can attest, most of the time I'm like, look at how long that name is from! Like, I'll be like, I can't make up a name that doesn't sound racist, like, right off the top of my head, but, like, if they've got, like, this long production list, and especially if they're out of country, sometimes there's, like, some really interesting names to just read.
Yeah.
But I don't like, I like sitting through the end, but I can see why putting them at the beginning of the film makes it so people will look at them,
because
you don't want to miss the beginning of the film, but, I mean, after a minute and a half of, maybe you get up and go.
Yeah.
I don't know, but my notes are like, it all ends with harpsichord music? What the f***? And then underneath it, I wrote, it really does end with just 3 minutes of music and a black screen.
Yeah.
Now, brought you through the entirety of this film. You made it. Good job. You probably watched this movie a couple times yourself. And if you haven't, please do, because
it's a fine film.
And I would recommend it to anyone.
Yeah.
Let's do our ending.
What shocked us and what made us applaud?
Yeah, but I got a couple really cute factoids first.
All right.
The budget for this film was approximately £200,000.
Wow.
That's, like, not much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what it is in 1975 money. The gross, I had to, they gave it in U.S. dollars. I did the worldwide gross because opening weekend it only made, like, $49,000. But I don't know, I didn't look up that in pounds. But I took the worldwide gross, and that was, in today's money, which is not 1975 money, $3 million, almost $4 million.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was pretty good. Also, fun fact, and this is all from Wikipedia and IMDb pages, so you're welcome for not having to read those now. Guess how many jokes are in this film? Because somebody counted. Remember at the beginning when I was like, I would have counted the mooses if I had more time, but I didn't.
I'm going to go with, like, over 100.
You would be correct. And also way off. I think I might mean 91 minutes. It's like, I'm sorry, applauders. Like, I'll pause it and it'll say, you know, 128 or whatever. But it really means, like, 1 hour and 28 minutes, which actually translates to 90 whatever. So, sorry. So it's like 90-something minutes. Mm-hmm. According to the internet, there are 527 jokes in this film. And 42 of them are in the opening credits. But 527 jokes means that a joke lands approximately every 10.5 seconds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. Because it's not the Monty Python actor's favorite film. There was a lot of trouble with production, and mm-hmm. I mean, like, it was miserable recording conditions, so let's do our shocked and applaud moments. What shocked you about this film?
And the shocked moment is the thing that we could do without.
Yes. The thing you found most abrasive, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess for me, it would be like the, I mean, I would say the Castle Anthrax bit. But after that really nice explanation that you put, I kind of don't hate it. It's not nearly as abrasive anymore.
Yeah, but if you leave it like a flock joke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see why you'd be like, meh.
Yeah. I guess that's what I would have to go with. You know, but it's kind of begrudging at this point because that explanation was just so on point. It really was.
You know what? I get a lot of dicks.
Yeah.
You know?
You got to justify them at some point in your life.
I really do.
Yeah.
I'll say something off color and somebody would be like, what? And I'm like, oh, let me explain. Yeah. My sense of humor really isn't stupid. It's just non-dismissal.
What about for you?
I think the thing that shocked me the most is... I think what makes me mad, and I say mad, but makes me, it spurs me to do, I think I should watch it with subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot that you miss in the dialogue of this film. And so when you mentioned that you watched it with subtitles, I was like, well, duh, why didn't I do that? So there's just, it needs so much unpacking because like I said earlier, that we've got a bunch of really educated men writing really fantastic dialogue. And although they struggled to put it on top of a physical visual format, I think a lot of it got thrown away. Like every time I listen to the peasant talk about the government, yeah. I'm like, yeah, no, I should know more about that. Oh God, he took a class. Oh, I should know. Yeah, no, I agree with what he said. Ah. So, can you be shocked at how you should be smarter to watch this film? Because that's what I feel like.
There's a lot of layers to it. So, I'm not going to fault you if you feel like this movie taught you something.
I feel like I should. I feel like I need to get smarter for this film.
Yeah.
But also, I think it's for everyone. So, yeah. Like, whatever level you enjoy on this film. Maybe that's my... All right, so now, let's reverse order. So, mm-hmm. Because the thing that I appreciated about this film, and I probably waxed about it a little bit earlier, was just that you've got so many levels of humor that there's something for anybody to get their teeth into. So if it's just a silly way that somebody performs, like if you, for example, let's take the scene where the peasant is debating with Arthur, right? It's a lot of dialogue in that scene. And I've listened to it, you know, like a dozen times or whatever over the course of my life. And I'm like, oh, I just caught that. Oh, I just caught that in terms of the structure of, oh, you think you're this monarchy that it's just by God given the right to rule over me. But really, this system of government works better. And this is how we function with our boards of directors. Whatever. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. That part's a lot to take in. Yes, we all did. But by the time you just understand that the dude is running his mouth and Arthur is not there to debate government, he's got his agenda. So he's like, ah, come with me. And the guy's like, I'm being oppressed, right? Like the second like this dialogue is broken and now there's like this physical part where mm-hmm. What's his face? What's his name?
Dennis.
Yes, Dennis, the character. But the actor's name is, I will tell you that his name. It's Michael Palin, who's given this fantastic speech. Michael Palin then, in the arms of King Arthur, who's about to drag him away, like, throws himself to the ground comedically. And so even if you haven't been able to follow the dialogue, like, he's just like, I'm being oppressed! And he's, like, flinging himself to the ground covered in dirt. And it's just so funny that, like, you don't have to be on every level of this film in terms of humor, because there's going to be something for you. Okay. But can you just, like... Okay, that scene ends with a he must be a king because he's not covered in shit. Like, I mean, throw it away on a curse word.
Yeah.
That happens a couple times and it's just good. Lydia, yeah. I would love to hear your applauding moment of this film.
I think it was just how much this film kind of influenced our generation, which is an internet culture, mm-hmm. and just the irreverence.
Mm-hmm.
And not just the like the throwbacks or the repetition. Like there's a lot of repetition in this movie,
mm-hmm.
and we kind of do that nowadays. not just with, you know, rebooting properties, but also just in constantly making references. There's a lot of times this movie references itself. And it's interesting how a movie can be such a big influence on a culture 20 something years after its initial release.
We're looking at like 40 years.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so much of how we see or how we as an internet culture kind of, you know, take these things about it, and we stuck those like patches to our jackets or buttons to our jackets as a way of signifying this is what we've chosen to adopt. This is what we've chosen to use as a way of identifying ourselves. It doesn't seem like it was that meaningful to the culture when it first came out.
Yeah, I don't think they knew what they were dealing with.
Right.
I think they knew that they were popular enough to have people backing them. They were back, like, they were given. Okay, so the £200,000 that I was talking about was given in £20,000 increments from 10 investors. And the two that I can remember off my head are Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd. So they were popular enough to have these big influencers, as we would call them now. Mm-hmm. But these very popular artists who are like, we love what you're making. Like, I think Pink Floyd? There was one band who backed them who would like stop their recording so that they would not miss Flying Circus.
Yeah.
So I think they didn't know that they were going to have long-lasting impact. Mm-hmm. But I think there was this popularity that they had no way of knowing was going to be sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just super glad that it was, because could you imagine not having this in your life?
Right. And it's one of those things where, like, I can't wait until we see 40 years down the road how we've influenced the culture of like generations.
Like, hazard to guess, because like, you look at the people who are super popular now and I'm like, 60-year-old me is not going to want a JoJo Siwa reference anywhere. Yeah. Like, 70-year-old me is going to be like, yeah, that was great in its time, mm-hmm. but I'm really over it. But there's not going to be a time when, like, I hang out with Lucas or another kiddo in my life for example, Silas was running around the house just yesterday, and he gets a little frantic sometimes. Mm-hmm. He came running up to me. He's like, he's a little 8-year-old, right? He comes right up to my chest. But he's like right up to my face, like short. And he's just like, nee! And I'm like, you don't know why that's important right now, but I'm going to show you very shortly.
Yeah.
We're going to watch the knee scene.
Right.
If I can only get, here's the thing. You can break this thing apart like a Kit Kat. If I can only give you the Knights Who Say Knee scene, that'll be enough. That'll be enough to maybe get you to draw into it later. And I think we've all been like that. 1,000 years later, after we started this podcast.
Yeah.
For this episode 7.
Yeah.
Now we're at the end of March, and mm-hmm. you've busted your tuchus, and we're out like a lamb.
And we're so grateful that you stick with us.
You listen.
Through snow and illness.
Wind, rain, coughing breaks.
And moments where we just had to stop to watch Monty Python.
little cats running through with their bells on. I mean, during a movie that has a lot of cat abuse.
Yeah.
Yeah. But plotters, we appreciate you.
We do.
We hope you're still working hard towards the goals that you want to accomplish in your life. We hope that you feel validated by the people around you. And if you're not getting that kind of encouragement, just know that we're behind you.
Yeah.
You're doing a good job. Look at how many people are doing such a bad job.
Yeah.
And we don't have to downplay people to build ourselves up.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? You did a thing.
Yeah.
You can't say that you didn't.
Provided that thing isn't murdering people.
We're anti-literal murder at this podcast.
Yeah.
Contemplating.
Contemplation without action. Don't mean to be specific here.
We don't want to encourage premeditation, but it's okay to look at a person and be like, it would be all right if you aren't in my life anymore.
Right. And sometimes you just got to step up and walk yourself out of their life. And if they call you on the phone, just maybe hit the ignore button. Or
no, here's what I've realized about my phone. Because although I'm not a popular person, I get demanded on mm-hmm. sometimes by certain people. All right. And I'm normally accessible. But here's the thing. Accessibility is not the same thing as availability.
Right.
So just because somebody can call you doesn't mean you need to pick up that phone right then. It's enough. I mean, if you don't know this already, text. If you're the type of person who calls, try texting.
Yeah.
Because that gives the person the ability to communicate with you on their terms.
Right.
If you need to call and that call doesn't, you know, go through,
right,
then be okay with a person who needs space before they have that intense level of interpersonal communication.
And if you are bleeding out on the side of the road, maybe contact 911.
Yeah.
Rather than someone who, you know, does not have the tools on hand to help you with your bleeding.
Right? Maybe the people you're thinking of as your emergency support aren't the people.
Right.
Not everyone in your life is a counselor. Not everyone in your life is EMT. And we need to recognize that about ourselves. And we need to recognize that about others. And we also need to finish this podcast for today, because we've been recording for 44,000 years.
Yeah. And it's a weird tangent that we got on.
I just want people to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
Because their Monty Python guys would be like, no, screw this. And they would have walked out.
Yeah.
Irreverence.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's it.
All right.
We're going to leave you in the hands of our production.
Thank you, John, for editing this and creating bumpers for the beginning and the end. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think we all appreciate that.
We really do.
Congratulations, you've reached the journey's end, applauder. This concludes episode 7, 1975's Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Thank you for clapping along with our coconuts, even if we aren't local to your weather patterns. Hey, this is your audio engineer and hater of spam, Jonathan, reminding you that these end-of-credit outros are part of our socially awkward way of not filling up your inbox. Do you like our ad-free, uninterrupted traversal through cinema's most memorable moments? We're able to provide you with just that because of direct funding from supporters like you. Search for Shocked and Applaud on Patreon to get higher quality unbleeped episodes and our undying respect. Absurdist humor not really your bag? We'll be back with something completely different in only 2 weeks. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Okay. Yay! Yay! Oh, my ear holes.